Okay, so Joel said the title of my talk. We work on approaches to apply pathogens in applied settings. And the crux of this ARS is tree fruit and potatoes. So this project has been one of my main projects for the last 2 years. And because I always forget, I'd like to put my acknowledgements up front. I've had some great technical support. And I'd like to acknowledge our cooperators and our funding agencies who have paid most of my salary for 2 years. So this species is a galeid, like the pink bollworm. It's a rather nondescript moth with characteristic black markings on the wings. The larvae are leaf, stem, and petiole miners. But in the absence of foliage, they will infest tubers, as you can see. And that's a concern for growers because there tends to be a low tolerance for the fresh market, at least. And the moths, in the absence of foliage, the moths will even go into cracks in the ground and lay eggs. The host range is known host ranges within the Solanaceae, so it includes tomatoes and peppers and tobacco. And there are also some weed hosts, such as nightshade and jimson weed, which probably cause a source of infestation in cropping areas. And this pest is actually a recent introduction to the Pacific Northwest. And currently, there's quite a concern. There's a pheromone trapping network. The website is indicated here. That's through Oregon State University and the Potato Commission. And they have several thousand traps in the Columbia Basin and beyond to sort of monitor and hopefully prevent its spread. And this is a slide I got from the International Potato Center in Peru. You can see its movement northwards. I think that may reflect it becoming more cold adapted. Its center of origin is, along with the potato, is the Bolivian Andes. So it's interesting to speculate about host strain selection, cold tolerance. I know that Sylvia Rondon at OSU is doing some work on that. So this project, these are the objectives. To work on the in vitro production of the virus, and also the control strategies we looked at, both under field and storage conditions. And they weren't true field studies, we had cages, I'll come on to that. This is a SEM of the granules, which look a little bit like potatoes, or as our research leader calls them, tater tots. And then this is a schematic of the infection process I won't go through. I'm sure you've heard that many times in this meeting. And this is a stain, a DNA stain of a larvae, a male larvae. You can see large extent of infection. But it's kind of curious. I worked on another granulovirus for codling moth. This is a little different. This is the infected larvae. You can see it actually survives, fails to pupate, which is the effect of mortality. But other than that, it's a little sluggish. But this virus doesn't seem to code for proteinase and chitinase, so the larvae doesn't lyse very easily. And this is just a quick schematic of the virus production process. We typically inoculate tubers with the virus, infest tubers that have been inoculated with the virus. The larvae can be collected and either stored for control or for further experimentation. And also used to produce more virus. And the simplest way is just to pulverize them, dilute them in suspension, and use that to inoculate further tubers. And we found that the optimum rate is about 5 affected larvae per liter of water for this. So there's a couple of pictures of our field setup. We ran this experiment in 2006 and 2007. We had these 1 meter cubed field cages, which we infested between, 42 to 52 days post-planting. And we applied our first sprays against the neonates. And we found that we got about 2 generations per season in this area, in the Pacific Northwest. And so all of the treatments I'll talk about, they were applied at between 7 and 14 day intervals with a compressed carbon dioxide sprayer. I don't have a picture of that there, at 500 liters per hectare. And the sampling intervals were typically at the end of the first and second larval generations, which corresponded to about early growth stage 4 and 5 of the potatoes. So here's data. This is 2006 harvest data I'm just going to show you. Here are our treatments. This is our virus high rate weekly application. So we have about a 76% reduction in the mine leaves and about a 96 to 97% reduction in larvae infesting foliage and tubers in the cages at the end of the season. And in terms of these tubers were actually placed in the cages. We didn't get very high infestation in the ground. We didn't get a lot of ground cracking, so the larvae couldn't get there. Plus, I nicely provided them nice tubers at the top, so they probably didn't need to. But in terms of controlling tubers, our virus was as effective as Monitor, which is metamidifos. That's the chemical standard. So that was quite encouraging. Combination and reduced rate treatments in the yellow. The virus BT rotation was more effective than the BT alone, but the reduced rate virus treatments didn't seem to be as effective. And it seems that perhaps the rate here, 4 times 10 to the 12 occlusion bodies per acre, is perhaps the minimum rate which would be effective. Okay, the next part of the talk is the the storage part. Currently, there are no registered insecticides for potatoes in storage. So this is kind of an interesting approach. Basically, again, we pulverized the infected larvae, incorporated them with various dry carriers. So we tested sand and talc, kaolin, clay, and diatomaceous earth, and freeze-dried these formulations and used them to cover our tubers. And the two basic tests I'll describe, one is pre-treatment, where we treated our tubers before infestation, and also as a curative, where we looked at the efficacy against larvae that were already infesting the tubers. And there's a lot of data from this experiment. I'm just going to show you the data for the talc, which was the carrier. I should also point out, in case you're wondering, would people want talc in their tubers? We did the same experiment but with dipping, so that didn't leave a residue. But I think it's quite curious. If you look at the dosage in the second column here, this is larval equivalents per kilogram of tuber. So we're getting really quite excellent control, all the way down as low as this rate, which equates to about one infected larvae per 100 kilos, which I think is way better than I expected. That is when the tubers were treated pre-infestation. Post-infestation, it's a different story, and even at our, this is a relatively high rate, we still weren't killing all our larvae. So it seems to me probably the best strategy would be to to prevent spread within storage. You know, you're not necessarily gonna kill everything, but you're gonna prevent any neonates that are spreading within a storage situation from surviving when they infest for the tubers. And this is the same data for BT. It was produced in very much the same way, but with Deliver was a waterproof powder formulation. And so the seems that about 38 milligrams per kilogram of tuber was the minimum rate you could get away with and get good control. Again, post-infestation, it was a lot lower. And so currently there is actually a commercial product produced. It's marketed in Peru as a dry powder. It can be mixed in bags, as you can see in the picture here. It's been quite successful. And so just to conclude, I think our data were good. We got up to 97% control within one season for our virus treatments. There's definitely more work that needs to be done with regards to the scaling up and looking at some of the operational considerations that would need to be applied. And so in 2008, we hope to run further trials looking at larger plots, more realistic pest densities, and the same with the storage studies as well. And I'd just like to finish by mentioning some other work in our lab that Larry's involved with more than me, but there's also some work with a fungus, Muscador, which is a biofumigant. Is that the 10 minutes?
10 minutes.
Okay. And also with nematodes, which you've all heard about at this session. There's one interesting approach with the nematodes is to combine them with foliar desiccants, which a lot of the potato growers use late season to largely for tuber quality. And so if you could combine those two approaches, the larvae would have to leave the plant at the same time that nematodes would be available. So that might be an interesting approach. So I've got a little, any questions?
We have plenty of time for questions.
Ian. In the tubers, well, they typically survive till the fourth instar before dying. They fail to pupate, so they would cause some localized damage within the tuber, and the length of time would depend on the incubation temperature. Yeah, Jared.
It seems there's a striking difference between your efficacy on a coated tuber versus the field. So there's probably a delivery issue in the field. Do you have some ideas as to how you're going to get better delivering as you get the similar coating that you would have?
Right, yeah.
Storage
conditions are very different, and I didn't sort of go into that. They're way better for microbials. You don't have the sun and everything. So it wasn't surprising that it worked a lot better in storage than in the field. I don't know whether or not a dry carrier in the field is practical. Probably not. There's definitely some scope to look at UV protectants. And we've done some work with the codling moth virus with UV protection, so that might be one approach to improve the field efficacy. Yeah.
You think it's UV that close in the field, so that's...
Oh, yeah. So I think our half-life studies were about 3.5 days. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's what you would expect. But that was an unprotected virus.